yes, it does seem like that Dylan Cease would fit very well for an Orioles team that right now it'd be hard to say is better than the team that ended last year disappointingly in the playoffs.
It is Hot Sheet, Scotty Braun along with Baseball America's JJ Cooper and Ben Badler. We are back, and then we will skip next week. That'll be the last little skip we do until spring training starts. So February 17th is another episode after this one. It is February 3rd right now, and then we will run throughout the season on a weekly basis on Mondays. You can catch us live or, of course, after the fact, YouTube, podcast, etc. This is a fun time of year, JJ, because we've got the top 30s out for every team. If you have a Baseball America subscription, you're all over that. If not, go get one. This is the best time of year to do that. But give us, you know, a little sneak peek of some names that were rising and could continue to rise as the season plays on here. I guess actually we can do that with a little first move so I don't forget about Roadrunner.
Meep, meep.
Got to give him his time. Here it is. 10 players primed to rise on the top 100 prospects list once the season gets going. JJ, your thoughts on some names?
Yeah, so this is a fun part of what we do, is kind of looking at, it's funny, we rank the top 100 and we're trying to rank it as accurately as we can for right now. And then we immediately start saying, hey, here's how we think it may change, how we think guys may improve as the season goes along. There are a couple of names on this list that really jump out to me. That stand out. And one of them, I would say pretty quickly, is Luke Kuechel with the Twins. He had a great first half of the season last year, has been one of the better college bats out of the draft a couple years ago, and then had Tommy John surgery. You don't hear that as often for a position player, but they kind of knew it. They kind of had worked with him in the first half of the season to get him at bats, kind of work around his defensive issues with his arm. And then he got the arm fixed. He should be back ready to go for 2025. And there's not really a logical, clear, you know, path for him right now with the Twins. But those things usually have a way of working themselves out. And if that's the case, like, this is a guy who I think his bat is big league ready or really close to it. I think he can be a solid defender at multiple positions. You know, I think he can run. I think he could provide kind of a very well-rounded offensive impact. He's someone who it would not surprise. We had him 46 on our preseason rankings. Would not surprise me at all if he kind of took a step up into that top 30 as graduation starts happening, as he gets back on the field, because that really was kind of one of the questions with Kuechel, is we just want to see him healthy and back on the field. He's one that stands out. Another one that stands out to me is there's a lot of Rays prospects who we could have put on the top 100. There are a lot we put on the 100, and I think there's more that we could have. But Trevor Harrison, who's at the back of our top 100, not number 90 on the list, would not shock me at all if he kind of really flew up these rankings this year. We saw last year him already take kind of big steps forward. The Rays love to develop young high school pitching prospects who they see as having a lot of potential to develop, a lot of upside. Taj Bradley from a few years ago is one that really stands out. You know, you could go back to Shane Boz, who they acquired from the Pirates in that fleece of a trade years ago, is another one. But Harrison kind of has all the starter traits you're really looking for. He got his feet wet. He really kind of got a good foundation under him last year. Would not surprise me at all if he takes kind of a big second step forward, another step forward in 2025 and really rises up this list. That's just a couple of them. But Ben, I'm sure you have some guys that you also are kind of really fascinated and looking forward to seeing.
Yeah, Kuechel's a good one. I almost wonder if he's going to maybe be too good to rank on our top 100 next year, and he ends up just graduating and being in the big leagues. The guy I'm most excited about right now, who I think has a chance to really rise up, is Zaire Hope with the Dodgers. I love Zaire Hope. He was 19 years old in low A last year, and he was great when he was healthy. It's 70 raw power, explosive bat speed, and the ability to drive the ball with as much impact and power as really just about any hitter in the lower levels of the minor leagues. And what I love about him in particular is that he doesn't have to sell out his swing to be able to generate that power. I mean, like, I love Bryce Eldridge with the Giants too. But you know, with a player like him who's 6'7", super long limbs, like, there's just going to be strikeouts that come with that kind of power. You don't have that with Hope. You have somebody who's strong, compact, short levels, it's a very efficient path to the ball, and the barrel stays in the hitting zone. So it's high contact, it's impact. He's able to recognize pitches well, work quality at bats, draw walks too. So I just don't see what it is about his offensive game that's not going to continue to translate when he gets to the upper levels of the minors and he's facing more advanced arms. So I think we're looking at somebody who has a chance to be a top 25 prospect by the end of the year, maybe even a top 10 overall prospect if everything clicks.
I got to throw one other out there, because when we did we look at our 10 who are rising, but we also did our story that was, hey, let's try to predict who's going to be the number one prospect in 2026, which is always a fun kind of exercise, because the guys who are in the top 10 usually are all guys who are going to graduate before next year's list unless they're injured. So you kind of throw them out of it and say they're not really the case, you know, the candidates. And we did the first pass on that, and we said, okay, who does everyone want to write about? And I think pretty much everyone wanted to write about Ranger shortstop Sebastian Walcott. And so with that being the case, it kind of came to the point, it's like, hey, we need to write up some other people in addition to Walcott. But I think that there is this strong belief that there's a decent chance that he could be the best or one of the best prospects in the game by this time next year. He's an elite prospect right now. Like, what he did last year has already put him kind of into that top tier. But if you said that he takes one more step forward this year, he's going to be in double A. He's going to have, if he doesn't graduate this year, if he has the year that we kind of think he could have, I do think that he's kind of a very good choice to be the number one prospect in the game at this time next year.
I think if everything, you know, we're seeing Junior Caminero hitting balls over the center field, not just a wall, the entire like batter's eye in the Dominican, you know, in the lead-em this winter. I think that's the kind of player that Sebastian Walcott could be if everything clicks. I mean, it's still higher swing and miss risk. Not sure if he stays at shortstop, goes somewhere else, but yeah, he has a chance to have that type of power.
By the way, Junior Caminero was just on Foul Territory. So if you want to check that out after this show, it is on the FT YouTube channel. And I want to take us straight to JJ, what you might find surprising, but is maybe my favorite topic in the prospect world these days: team rankings, because it helps to tell the picture with major league clubs in terms of predicting how a season's going to play out, how trades are going to play out, right? Does my team have the prospect capital, the assets to pull off the trades that you want to see? Also, is my team being undervalued because there are prospects that are going to come up and make an impact? Or are these prospects kind of further down the line? So anyway, with all of that being said, word on the street is Wednesday for the prospect rankings 1 through 30 in Major League Baseball for all 30 MLB teams. So what can you tell us as a little teaser? Like, who's rising, who's falling, and just who stands out in general, right?
Okay, couple of things with that. One, they'll be interesting, and we don't have the answer to this yet because we're going to actually meet on this tomorrow to kind of finalize it. But we do our rankings for the Prospect Handbook. So if you got your Prospect Handbook digital edition, you kind of already have a little sneak peek. But that was before Roki Sasaki signed with the Dodgers. And the way we do this, like, we try to use kind of the research that's out there. And one of the things that research into prospect valuations has shown year after year is top tier talent is worth more than depth. Depth's important, but so we've got to figure out how much does signing a Roki Sasaki, who's our number one prospect in the game, how much is that going to move the Dodgers up? But when we talk about depth, you know, and I think that is kind of an interesting part of this, an important part of this as well. The team that really does stand out to me depth wise are the Rays. The Tampa Bay Rays at this time last year, I thought were probably the thinnest that they'd been in quite a while, which wasn't that thin. Still better than a lot of organizations, but I just felt like the Rays over the last decade, and they've had some misses, let's be clear. Like, there are some guys who haven't established themselves from these groups, like the Curtis Meads, who we still need to see what he's going to do, Jonathan Aranda, guys like that. But they've also had a lot of hits, like you mentioned, a Caminero and guys like that. Shane Boz kind of back to healthy last year. Taj Bradley had a good year. But the other thing with them is that their starting pitching had kind of gotten a little thin. And then their sell-off at the deadline, trading Zach Eflin, trading a Jason Adam, trading Randy Arozarena. They really did restock the farm system, and what it does mean now, they have more than 10 top 100 caliber prospects. Not that many guys made the 100, but their number 11, number 12 prospects on our current Rays list are plausible guys you can make a case for the top 100. Their depth as far as guys who would probably be top 15 in a lot of organizations stretches well into the 20s. They had a good international class as well. That's a team that really stands out to me as one that kind of, when you say who could be like the team that just does it all in the big, you know, in the minor leagues in 2025, wouldn't surprise me at all, because they have guys at AAA, they have guys at AA, they're going to have guys at high A. I don't even know how they're going to work out the rotations in low A and high A, because they have more starting pitching candidates than they really have spots in those, you know, those levels. That's one that stands out to me, but, you know, I'm sure Ben has some that stand out to him as well.
Yeah, and the Rays are, that's one way to have a deep farm system, right, is when you're consistently trading away players from your major league team. You know, I think they've done well in other areas of procuring talent too, but that's certainly one way to have a deeper farm system. The ones for me that stand out are especially the teams that have both drafted well and done well signing international players. And I think the Brewers certainly check that box. I mean, you look at certainly their top end talent, I think is very good. But then you look at the players deeper through their system, and you get to players in the teens and the 20s. They're adding another wave of really good international talent this year. Players like Brylan Antunez, Kenny Fenelone. You saw what they did last year with their class. Obviously, Jesus Made, number one in that system. Luis Pena is already top 10. Getting a guy like a Jose Anderson, an outfielder last year. There's just a lot of good. There's a good balance of talent throughout the entire organization, both from the draft internationally. And I think you could say the same thing about the Guardians. I mean, it certainly helps to have the number one overall pick in the draft, not just to get Travis Bazzano, but then to be able to spread that bonus pool money around, get a guy like a Chase Mobley, right-handed pitcher out of the draft last year, Joey Oakey, Braylon Doty, and you look at guys in the 20s even in that system, somebody like a Gabriel Rodriguez, a shortstop, or a Robert Arias, outfielder, another international prospect from last year's class. So I think the depth in those systems definitely jumps out for me.
Okay, and then maybe my second favorite topic is drawing up trade packages based on some of the prospect talk that we've got going here with teams. So this actually does tie into something that I want to get into, and that's a Dylan Cease trade package. Could this happen again? Dylan Cease was traded last year from the White Sox to the Padres in the middle of March. I would not think the Padres would be trading him if you asked me a year ago, but here we are, a number four finisher for the NL Cy Young on a contending team making less than $14 million on the trade block. So let's cue up this tweet from Jimmy Regazzo, who writes for Sports Illustrated. He said, should the Mets sell high on Luis Angel Acuña in a deal for Dylan Cease? Went through what a trade package might look like with the Padres and why the Mets would do it and why they would not. And it sounded like the ask, or at least from his side, was, you know, multiple high-end players, at least three top 25 prospects from the San Diego side. Or guys, I did read, I'm trying to remember who it was, that it was in The Athletic, and I believe it was from Dan Hayes, who also was on Foul Territory with us earlier today, that the Padres would prefer to go the major league player route. Good luck with that at this point in the season. So can a team talk the Padres into prospects and longer term assets in order for them to get worse this year for Dylan Cease? JJ, what do you have?
I think Dan's right. I think it's more likely to be that they kind of try to do a one step forward, one step back, where they're kind of trying to compete. They're still trying to contend. The Padres aren't really in that point where you say, okay, we're going to clearly make ourselves significantly worse for this year, especially when the clock is ticking on, you know, that some of these deals that they have, the players are still really good, but Xander Bogaerts is not going to be an appreciating asset as years go along. You know, as far as a player, he's going to be someone who is going to be moving down the defensive spectrum further and further guys like that, there's a reason for the Padres to go for it. Now, the one thing I did when I saw that, the three top 25 prospects, that's such a broad kind of, to me, that I kind of tripped on that a little bit, because I first hear that and I think three top 25 prospects in baseball, it's like no one gets that in a deal. We can't really remember like one, you know, like there's just not many teams who have three top 25 prospects. Then you realize, oh, he means three top 25 in an organization prospects. And I'd say that's a little light for someone like Dylan Cease. If you look at what he got last year, it was a significantly larger and significantly better package than that. Included a top 100 prospect, included multiple, I would say, fringe of the top 100 type guys. I think that's kind of what you'd be looking at. If, again, this is the big if kind of salaries aren't a big part of this. Now, that's where this gets really messy. He's on a below market deal, I would say. You could easily say he's on the final year before he hits free agency. But that's where this does get interesting, because if you said, like, I see that there's a, you know, who would be the headliner from the Mets, someone like Sproat, I think that would make sense. Like, if you look at kind of what he was garnered last year, which was Drew Thorpe and some other pieces, Brandon Sproat would be probably a headliner in a prospect type deal. This is kind of a proposal we have, you know, that I want to, when I'm going to throw a proposal out, I want it to be something that if it's anything, it's slightly an overpay, because it's just, I'm just fighting back against the many thousands of proposals put out there by fans who almost always are like, can I please propose all the players that we would not mind losing in a trade and see what we get back? This would be more, you know, a guy who is a top 100 prospect in Sproat, and then two other guys who are not too that far off of the top 100. Again, I think that the Padres would probably be more likely to try and see if they can get a fit that helps. They need help at catcher, for instance. If they could get a catcher who's ready to kind of step in, or, you know, they're not all set at shortstop. Something like that might help the big league club more than a prospect trade.
Yeah, I think that's what you're talking about, JJ. Like the Padres are sort of in a situation now where it's like the Brewers, where they're unfortunately in that same spot where they're trading away somebody like Corbin Burnes and trying to get back that, you know, big league ready now talent or near ready talent, like one of those deals. Because, yeah, this is not a situation where you want to be tearing everything down. I mean, I wonder if you even should trade Dylan Cease at this point, just given the position that I think they should be in to contend this year. But if they are going to trade him, yeah, that's what I would want back, is major league ready talent.
All right, JJ, can you whip up another trade for us then with the Braves?
Okay. So now let's try to do one that kind of does a little bit of both here. I don't know if the Braves would do this. Let me be clear here, right? But again, I want to throw it out there, like this would be something that would make some logical sense from the standpoint of if the Braves are willing to trade Drake Baldwin. Drake Baldwin is, you could say, a big league ready catcher. Now, is he ready to be their everyday catcher? That's a little bit more of a question, but he could probably work his way into that eventually. And they do have, you know, Luis Campusano to kind of split that job with. And then you would be talking about two high ceiling, but far away pitchers who've already had injuries. So that would be something where, you know, Cease would obviously be a very useful addition to the Braves rotation. And I do think, like, as much as they would hate to give up Drake Baldwin, it's not something where they couldn't do that, because this is a team that does have an everyday catcher in Sean Murphy. So, like, I would, when I propose a trade like this, we're just, you know, throwing darts against a wall, hoping to hit a target here. But the thing I would say about it is that's kind of the level you're usually talking about, which is it should hurt a little bit. You're acquiring Dylan Cease. It shouldn't be something where you say, hey, you know, are there some prospects we can trade away that we're never going to miss? That's not something that really fits. So that's something where, like, a Braves trade would actually make, I don't know if it makes the Padres better, because again, I'd still rather have Dylan Cease than a rookie Drake Baldwin, but at least it fills a need for them while also clearing, obviously, salary space, which would be part of the reason they're trading Dylan Cease.
Yeah, that's super crafty and creative. I mean, let's do one more. We'll let fans chime in when they listen to this. We can always look back at it, or maybe something actually does happen and you can chime in at that point. If you think the asking price for your team is too high, and if you're watching this show, you probably like prospects and you're probably like, no, I don't want to lose this guy. But it's Dylan Cease, fourth best pitcher in the National League last year, according to voting, right? Okay, last team. Let's do the Orioles. They desperately need someone like this. I cannot emphasize it enough. I talk about it all the time. Give me a package that the Orioles can provide. Here it is. Want to walk us through it, JJ?
So this is one where I don't think that the Orioles, that this even hurts that bad, to be honest. I don't know how well Kjerstad fits. They have enough other outfielders. They signed Tyler O'Neill, where I think that this is a case where it gives the Padres another piece, you know, because Kjerstad is basically big league ready, although he may be, like, I haven't looked it up, but he's probably about the same age as Dylan Cease, to be honest, not that much different. It gives also the Padres two high upside guys, or Honeycutt's a high upside guy. Say Michael Ferret is a solid pitching prospect, but, you know, really kind of blossomed last year. Honeycutt is that kind of high ceiling guy that if everything clicks could be an impact big leaguer. There's a lot of risk to the bat, a lot of risk to the contact issues and all that. But that would be a deal that obviously would make the Orioles a lot better. And at the same time, it is a top 100-ish prospect in Kjerstad. Honeycutt isn't that far. He's probably a top 200, 250 prospect, I would say, right now. So that would be one that, you know, maybe the Padres hold out and they want a Kobe Mayo in it, which I think the Orioles probably would be a lot more reluctant to do. Maybe they try to make a Colton Cowser kind of the, you know, in a scenario like this, which again, I would say the Orioles probably will be a little bit more reluctant to do. But yes, it does seem like that Dylan Cease would fit very well for an Orioles team that right now it'd be hard to say is better than the team that ended last year disappointingly in the playoffs. They need to kind of take a step forward. Dylan Cease would obviously, much like Corbin Burns did in the late kind of offseason trade last year, kind of really gave them a boost. That Dylan Cease would be the new version of that.
Yeah, that's a money proposal. I think that the Orioles would do it in a second. I think the Padres would do that too, and it might be the best kind of offer they get. So I'm very much on board with that one. And you're right, JJ. I don't know if this team's better than they were last year, and they really struggled down the stretch. They're good. They're playoff good. But they lost Corbin Burns and Anthony Santander. I don't want to overlook that. They replaced a little bit, but not in the same way, especially in the rotation. They got back-end starters from the looks of it versus losing, you know, one of the top five pitchers in baseball. Anyway, JJ, thank you for the time. Good to see you, and a lot going on in the Baseball America world. So we'll catch you on the next episode in a couple weeks, okay?
Sounds good.
Sounds good. JJ's out. Let's hit the final sprint as we're going to go into the draft world and talk about a top 200 coming soon. Okay, let's do this. Carlos Collazo, ready to go. Let's talk draft. Carlos, you ready? Top 200. Give us a little sneak peek of what fans can expect, especially those that don't have a Baseball America subscription and, you know, they're just starting to kind of get their brains geared up for draft season. What do we have?
Yeah, we're going to top 200 this week. We're only a few weeks away from the college baseball season kicking off. So really, this is our list just to get everyone started, everyone ready to go. There's not a ton of change in the top 10, obviously, going from a fall winter top 100 to a top 200, going from the 101 to the 200 is really the biggest update. But I think this year's class, after just having a lot of conversations with scouts, getting some feedback from fall workouts in college, talking to scouting directors, doing our preseason All-America voting that scouting directors do for us and best tools, this class feels very solid all around. This is the first time, and I would say the last few years, that we haven't had a single demographic. So high school hitting, high school pitching, college hitting, college pitching, that scouting directors don't view as below average. It's 50s across the board. So it's very well-rounded. The depth is solid. I think the big question is, who are these impact hitters at the top going to be? The hitting at the top of the college class in particular does not look as strong as we've had in the last few years. I think there's some contact questions. Maybe two interesting names that are rising up the board on this update specifically, who I'll highlight here, is Luke Stevenson, a catcher out of North Carolina. We had him in our top 100 previously, but right now it feels like he's a consensus first round player. A lot of people think he's the best college catcher in the class, and he almost aligns with how the draft class is. He's very well-rounded. There's maybe not a single sexy tool that he has, but he does everything at a very high level. He hits for power. He defends. Maybe plus defense is his kind of carrying tool because he's a great defender behind the plate. He's a guy, if he has a strong season, I could see him shooting up inside the top 10, going very high in this draft. And then another player that I'll mention who's kind of moving up in this update is Dean Curley, who's a shortstop at Tennessee, draft eligible sophomore. He really has a well-rounded offensive game. I think one of the critiques that I'll talk about a lot this year is a lot of the college hitters have power. They swing and miss a lot. Dean Curley is a guy who does have a lot of contact skill. He does have power. He's playing a premium position in a premium college conference. So those are two of probably the most notable up arrow players in this update to keep an eye on, especially as college season gets rolling.
Yeah, I think one of the most fascinating players to watch in this cycle is Crew Schoolcraft, because, I mean, this guy he's a high school player reclassified from the 2026 class. He's 6'8", left-handed pitcher / first baseman. I'm sure some team is going to draft him and probably make him only be, make him only do one way, like probably left-handed pitching, I would guess. But I think it is a legitimate, true two-way talent. I wish the Giants had allowed, Bryce Eldridge to do the same thing. But obviously, hey, Bryce Eldridge is looking pretty good right now as a hitter only. But, a 6'7", 6'8", left-handed pitcher who's up to like 96, 97 miles an hour, huge upside on the mound. Oh, and he has monster raw power from the left side of the plate. I think his swing works pretty well too for such a big dude. You're probably going to be some swing and miss just because of how, just how long his arms are, how big his strike zone is that he has to cover. But I think it's a potential huge power arm from the left side and a power bat from the left side as well.
I guess last word here, Carlos, before we step out, and obviously we'll talk draft throughout the year heading up to the draft in July, but any other notable names, especially from the high school world, that we need to get familiar with that have been rising or just are creating more buzz than, a few months ago?
Yeah, I think Crew Schoolcraft is a name to highlight. That is a smart one. I do think the physicality of the high school players at the top of this draft is really exciting. I mean, Ethan Holliday, Xavier Nyans, who is a Washington third baseman and pitcher. He's also a two-way player. He's been up to 93 on the mound. I think most teams probably view him as a hitter moving forward. He's got maybe 70 grade raw power in the future. So he's a name that's kind of always been at the top of this list. A riser a little bit further down who maybe will be exciting is Slater DeBrun. He is this, 5'9", small contact oriented speedster, great defense in center field. I'm sure he's going to get a lot of Corbin Carroll or Slade Caldwell comps as we approach the draft, just because he fits that West Coast undersized left-handed hitting up the middle, top of the order kind of table setter type. I think the strength of this year's class, at least as I'm looking at it right now, is the high school shortstops. That's a demographic that a lot of scouts and a lot of teams obviously really like. There are players like Ethan Holliday at the very top, Cason Cunningham, who's maybe the best pure hitter in the class, Eli Willits, who is super well-rounded and athletic and has bloodlines. Billy Carlson is another two-way player in this class that I think is probably more likely to play shortstop in the long run. But there's just a lot of depth. And what I'm looking forward to in the next few weeks, next few months, is who is going to go from that solid top 50 prospect and really cement themselves as no doubt top 10 overall prospects, because I think there's a lot of room for players to climb the board every year, and that's especially true this year.
There you go. Okay, much more coverage from Carlos. He'll join us often here on Hot Sheet, and really this is the time of year, like I mentioned at the top of the show, where you've got top 30s per organization in MLB, you've got the top 100 in Major League Baseball as far as prospects, and then you've got the draft top 200 here dropping this week. So Carlos, good to see you again. Ben, thanks for the time as always. Make sure you get yourself a Baseball America subscription. And if you're watching us right now on YouTube, hit the sub button. That'd be cool. Appreciate you. Same thing on the podcast side. And we'll see you in 2 weeks where we get back to our every week schedule on Hot Sheet.